There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Benched with Bubba. This will be episode 35, and we have a week of baseball on the books. So talk a little fantasy baseball, opening week action, and some fun stuff along the way. And I will be joined by none other than the one and only Jessica Kleinschmidt. You can find her on FanRag Sports, sportsnot.com, a fun little podcast with our guy Alex, Moonshots Pod. But more importantly, follow her on Twitter at KleinschmidtJD, where you'll see everywhere else she is. Because if there's something to write about in the baseball world, Jessica covers it. Jessica, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. Thanks again for joining. I've been following you for a while. Very knowledgeable. I've listened to some of your podcasts. I'm very excited to have you joining me tonight. So thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to it.
No problem. Before we get too far into this, I forgot to put it on the outline. This is not bad, but I know it probably sounds really scary right out the gate. But I did notice that you are covering the Reno Aces.
And, I am.
What exactly are you doing for the Reno Aces? Because I love minor league baseball. I can watch pretty much any game. I literally went into my calendar when schedules came out, and any stadium within like 2 hours of me, I started putting dates in of games I wanted to go to.
Right.
So what exactly are you doing? Because I'm kind of jealous.
Well, I don't really work for the Aces. I work with them. I'm really lucky. And this is going to sound weird, but I feel like I'm very blessed to be able to live in a city where there is AAA baseball or minor league baseball, because it's not a lot of coverage. So if something goes down, I'm one of the first people to know. And I mean, I had to break Clint Barmas's news last year when he retired, because he retired in a AAA game. Tim Lincecum was here, and there wasn't too much crowd and like the media stuff. And don't get me wrong, MLB coverage is great, but a lot of times it's covered so much you don't really miss anything. So when I'm from a minor league perspective, I get to do that. So they're the most amazing people in the PR department, and they're always willing to have me interview any of the guys. And I've gotten, you know, a lot of great, you know, pats on the back from some of the coverage I've done with them. So that's kind of what I've been doing. I'm interviewing, you know, Anthony Bonda recently, the Diamondbacks number one prospect, and a bunch of the other top prospects in the organization. And last night I just got to watch Jeff Hoffman play, and, you know, Chris DiNorfia is on the team. Chad Qualls walks out. I was like, what a time to be alive. So it was like really cool little stuff that only baseball geeks like you and me would really appreciate, but it's pretty awesome. So that's kind of what I've been doing. If there's ever a story that needs to be told, I make sure that I tell it.
No, that's awesome. And that's why I like it. Like you said, it's unique. It's not covered enough. I think some of the best stories are in the minor leagues, because you've written some stuff, or at least tweeted about it and stuff. There's guys that just, you know, 10-year career minor leaguers that no one knows who these guys are. And unless you've watched Bull Durham, you have no clue how this is in. It's really cool stuff. And I just wanted to bring that up real quick. And that doesn't hurt. You get to see a pretty cool farm system with Arizona. So that's pretty solid too.
Yeah. And what's good, especially with all like the drama of like the minor league players, you know, and the lawsuits not getting paid enough. I was talking to a friend recently. I was like, I just want to go up to them and give them all a hug. Like, I was like, I'm here for you. If you need anything, I'll make you sandwiches, like whatever you need. Like, it really breaks my heart, but And the AAA is always interesting to cover. They're either in an awful mood because they just got demoted, or they're waiting to get promoted, or I'm very lucky and I have an amazing person like Anthony Bonda who's just always willing to talk to me, or, you know, guys like that. So I really suggest, even if you can't cover it, like, go out and support your local minor league baseball team, because they deserve it and they're happy to be there. They truly love the sport. So I'm always a person to talk about that time blue in the face. So I apologize, but I definitely think that the community needs to support local for sure.
Yeah. Don't apologize, 'cause that's a great point. They do need to support. I go to the San Jose Giants a lot. They're about an hour and a half away from me.
Right.
And their stadium, it's like half full. The ticket's like $5. Like, really, it's not going to cost a lot of money. It's still good baseball, prospects, the works. I saw Puig rehabbing there last year.
Right. You never know who you can see.
Yeah, you get all kinds of fun stuff, but the support part's very important because, like you said, most of them are living with, like, families, so right. they like just having fans to talk to. And second, there are so many teams that are losing, like, they have to move because they're not getting support. So these kids already have it tough enough, and now you're making them transfer all the time because they can't even keep a team in the area anymore. It's pretty crazy, but I actually might have to have you on just to talk minor league baseball sometime.
I'm very much okay with that. That's great. Not a lot of people get it. Yeah, not a lot of people get it, but that's okay.
Yeah, one last thing. You get one of the best bobbleheads ever later this year, so that's awesome.
Oh, yes, the Bauer. That's going to be great.
I actually put that date into my phone because it's not that bad of a drive, and I have family up there. So I'm really close to making that trip.
Yeah, I'm almost like, if you want me to buy a ticket, I'll do it. Like, because I don't know if they give them out to the media members, but I remember, like, last year there have been some giveaways where I've seen people in the press box with them. But, I mean, I'm pretty close with some of the PR people. I'm like, yo, hook it up, because Lord knows I need. Because the DFS community, like, loves to troll Trevor Bauer. So if I get one of those, that's just going to be the icing on the cake.
It'll be the perfect bobblehead to add to my bobblehead collection. Yes, that's very nerdy of me to say, but I love my bobbleheads.
Don't even trip. I have plenty too. I get it.
All right, let's get into some major league action. We have a little over a week in the books. What are some of the major takeaways? I know you wrote a little piece on that recently at Sportsnot. You can even mix in the overreactions all in one if you want, but what are you taking away from the first week?
Well, the thing about the first week is it is the first week. So I wrote something, and you mentioned it, is a lot of overreactions. And the reason why I wrote it was because if you follow anything on Twitter, the fans are so excited to be back. But some of them, it's like, okay, you know, like, the Diamondbacks are not going to win the World Series, you know, like, but if they, you know, they're definitely going to have an interesting scenario. Tim Tebow won't play in the majors. You know, the Mariners are going to be okay. Like, let's all relax. So the thing that I noticed about the first week is nothing that I was too surprised with, because I had noticed that the Cubs are good, but there are so many other good teams, you know. And I hate when people are like, oh, the Cubs are just going to repeat, because that's the one question, you know, a lot of podcasts and radio will ask me before the season starts, like, who's going to win it? And it's like, well, I don't have a crystal ball, but looking at all these teams, like, I was overwhelmed, because you sit there and you're thinking, like, oh, the Cubs are going to be good, but then you're thinking, like, well, crap, the Astros are going to be good, and then this team's going to be great, and then you bring all these other teams into it. So a lot of these teams are kind of like proving my point. Like, there's so much competition this season, and don't get me wrong, the Cubs are always going to be good, but like, the Indians could repeat a scenario too, and the Houston Astros are my World Series pick. And then, you know, you have a team like the Rockies that are, you know, constantly have that up playing in Coors, and NL West is always a challenging division, and everything else, you know. So that's kind of what I'm sitting at the moment. And I mean, it's still too early for me to call as far as players go, teams, but player wise, like, the young guys are really impressing me across the board, and, you know, really earn their spring training spots. You know, they did well in spring training. When they're battling for a position, that's the main time that you have to pay attention to, that spring training. But, you know, the numbers kept going, and you have guys like Manuel Margot just killing it and just impressing me, you know, being able to cover those guys in the PCL and have them excel, and Hunter Renfro on the same team and all those guys. So that's the main objective that I've noticed that coming into the season, is making sure these young guys can keep up, and really paying attention to the schedules, not to get too ahead of yourself. And, you know, I'm a fan of a couple teams, but when you're a writer and a radio personality and you cover the sport, you got to kind of separate yourself a little bit. But I've noticed, it's definitely been a lot of wait and see kind of options, but more towards the players and the teams.
Yeah, no, that was very well said, because like you said, you look at Twitter and, you know, I'm a Giants fan, so Melanson blows the save the opening day. Oh, no, the bullpen's the same as it's always been. Like, come on.
You're going to go 0-162, right?
so many other things like that. When they play so many games, there's going to be so many injuries, there's going to be trades. I told someone on a podcast recently that you break it down, it's like, okay, each team's already going to win 60 and lose 60. Now what do they do with the rest of the season? That's right. What you need to worry about, not 1 week, seven games or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's a very good point. And I love the take you had on the young players thing. We're going to get into a lot of them later, but like Manny Margot and Renfro, I've been a huge Renfro guy. If you want to talk fantasy-wise, I drafted him in a dynasty league like 6 years ago, and I've been.
Oh, wow. So when he was still in his mama's belly, you drafted him. Good for you.
He was in college. I drafted him because we were dynasty that deep that I was like, okay, something about this kid. I need him. So I've been drooling.
That's impressive. Good for you.
So I love these young kids, and that's one thing that's different than, you know, years past. You've watched baseball for a long time. I have. I like the take on the Cubs because people forget they were down 3-1 last year. So there's a lot of parity is the wrong word. I hate that word. But it's pretty even. But then the young kids part, there's a lot more rebuilding than there used to be. And we're starting to get really close. Like the Padres are only a year or two away now. But we've been watching them rebuild. You got the Braves, the Brewers, Yankees. The Reds, like all these teams. Yeah. Yankees, I love the Yankees. The evil empire is going to be back. And it's going to be scary.
I know, but isn't it a beautiful thing to actually have MLB embracing the younger kids and taking them seriously? And, you know, to me, that's just what I ultimately – because people say I'm such a geek with these young rookies and prospects, but if you really look at it, without them, we don't have a future. So I love that you have that mentality, and it's true, because I hate the term rebuilding, but I don't really know what else to call it. You know, like starting from scratch is still a slap in the face, and, you know, like this is what we got. Doesn't say we're going to do it. We have – you know, this is what we're having to settle with isn't great either. So now I'm right there with you, but it's really a good thing that MLB is willing to open themselves up to these young bats, and they're taken seriously. You know, it's not like, oh, he's young. It's like, well, all the older guys are getting, you know, old and retiring, and they're few and far between now. So I'm glad that MLB has that mentality now.
And I think they can kind of credit the Royals. They kind of were the first team to really run with it. The Cubs have run with it, and they've seen the success. They're both won World Series. So why not start this philosophy? Even the Phillies, I didn't even mention the Phillies. I love what they're doing. It's really good to see. And, like, you know, maybe it's just the nerds in us that like minor league baseball. So now all these guys we've watched for a few years are getting their shot. I don't know. You get to cover them, so it's even better. But I love it. It's really, really awesome. Speaking of some of these teams, let's overreact here. Some teams kind of out of nowhere, Kate, got really hot starts. Some predicted them to be good. Some predicted them to be okay. Like the Twins and Angels coming off of bad years, the Rays, Reds, Rockies, D-backs, all of them standing starts. Obviously, you even said it yourself, D-backs are not winning the World Series. I saw them in person last night, and that 1-4-5 is just deathly scary. Scary. And that's what I tried telling people at the game last night. When they're all, oh, they were so bad, we're like Giants fans are crying. Well, you forget the top two in that order were injured like all of last year. Mm-hmm. People forget these little things. What's your kind of feeling on some of these teams that took off in the opening week, and what do they have in store?
Well, the one team that I would stutter over would be those Diamondbacks, because I talked to Tony La Russa maybe like a couple months ago, and he was here for like a banquet with the Aces to like hang out with the season ticket holders. And I was the butthead who didn't ask about his managerial experience or his past. I was like, what's the deal with the Diamondbacks? Like, tell me the things. And, you know, I was that guy. So I asked him about, do the Diamondbacks have less pressure on them this season? And I really think that's radiating right now. You know, you think about the NL West, you're going to be thinking those three teams, which is the Giants, the Dodgers, and then the Rockies, of course. And then there's like the 50-foot pile of crap, and then there's the Diamondbacks and then the Padres. But this time around, I think the less pressure is going to benefit them. And, you know, I'm very much the girl who's –
I We lost you, Jess. We lost you. Come back.
Here, getting demoted. Shelby Miller getting demoted and stuff like that. All of that, like, genuinely made, like, a huge impact on them. So going into it, and I'm, like, a raised Ace fan. I'm used to, like, those scrappy teams who just, like, don't care. So they're just, like, going to go in it and doing that. And that's ultimately why the A's are successful. And that's why sometimes the Astros are successful, because they just don't care. They just go out there and play. And sometimes you have to play that Sandlot mentality baseball in order to succeed. So they're the main team that I'm like, okay, all right, I see you. And, you know, the NL West doesn't get a lot of credit for being a tough division. They very much are. And that's an overreaction that somebody sent me. Like, don't you think the NL West is not that, you know, difficult or something like that? And I was like, no, it's a very difficult division to play in. So they're probably the one team that I'm surprised about. The Rockies, I'm not surprised with them at all, because they've always kind of been like, all right, cool. You know, and they're playing Coors, that definitely benefits them. But then every now and then we'll have that weird start like they did last night with, like, Weaver just, like, throwing awesome, which was trippy. Like, I know, Weaver, you have no velocity, but how much can you depend on that Coors feel? Like, come on, that's weird. So, and that's pretty much it. Cause the Rays are always, they have everything they need to do to really compete. Lomo out of the gate had a phenomenal opening day series, and that was great to watch. The Angels, that's not going to happen. People need to calm down. Like, that's just not going to happen. Same with the Twins and the Reds. So it's just kind of like those teams, you know, look at the White Sox last year. They came out hot too. And then they ultimately, I mean, they didn't fail, but they didn't, you know, do amazing things. So that's definitely something that people need to keep in the back of their mind. But of course, there are some things that I'm still paying attention to.
Yeah, a couple things I wanted to touch on there. The way you basically three are have a shot, three don't. Those are the same I agreed with. My prediction, right. So I'm actually really high on the Rays. Their pieces and play are great. It's just a matter of, do they trade or don't they trade? I think if they stay healthy and don't trade, I think they can 10 for, like, a wild card. I really do.
Oh yeah.
But, and I get, you're one of the few that have agreed with that, by the way. I got a lot of, like, you're high.
Oh yeah, but I mean, at this point, like, who cares? Like, that's one thing about baseball is how you be on drugs and still, like, these things happen. Were people really anticipating the Cubs to be as wonderful? Not necessarily. You know, I love that. I'm just glad it wasn't, like, you know, another boring, no offense, but, like, the Giants again. That would have been just a boring thing to cover, because it's like, okay, that's great, we know what happens. Or, like, the Cardinals again, like, great, another, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of like the Cinderella story, but I'm right there with you. That's what I love about it, is how unpredictable it can be.
And the other thing I wanted to touch on is the NL West. People do not understand, and people will claim my bias or something, but it's not. I just watch it all the time. But literally, they beat up on each other all year round. So people see the records and they go, oh, the division's garbage. And it's really not. Like, these guys go to battle every night. The D-backs are really good. Like we already said, they had injuries on offense. If the pitchers come back healthy, I don't trust Greinke's velocity, but that's a whole other story.
Right.
But it's really interesting. The Rockies are just always scary. You have to face them 9 times a year in Coors. You can go open 9 real easily. So it's totally different than what people expect. Let's get into a little fantasy baseball talk, since you cover a ton of fantasy baseball. Mm-hmm. And first off, how many leagues do you partake in? Because some of these experts partake in way too many leagues. So what are you doing?
Yeah, so I do a lot of DFS coverage, and you can't really count that as, like, one or two leagues. That's a big league all around. I also live in Nevada, so I can't play at the moment, so I'm just kind of giving advice, which kind of feels like I'm in a league, but, you know, that doesn't really count. So the roto stuff, the season-long type of stuff, I'm in 5 this year.
No, it's not bad.
Which is
that's
healthy. That's a healthy number.
I'm in like 5 or 6. Totally fine. So I get that.
Anything beyond that is usually because I can't think of a cute pun for my team name.
That's great. That is great. What's your best team name?
Throws Like a Grail.
The way he hits? Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. Throws like a Grail.
I mean, that's pretty good. Either way it works, right?
Yeah, no, that's solid. Solid stuff. Do you prefer roto or head-to-head?
Usually head-to-head, probably because, you know, like, when I was little, that was what I was used to. Because you know, I did this fantasy. I was fantasy football forever, and then when fantasy baseball got introduced to me, it was like, this thing is stupid and it's boring. I can't do it. So I took like 3 years off from it, and then once I started becoming more of like an analyst, I was like, I need to kind of go back into that because I'm getting all these podcasts and radio responses, and people are asking me. So I kind of went back more into it over the last 5 or 6 years. So I think head to head is just kind of what like I'm used to.
No, that's good. Yeah, because I've always said to people that baseball is just, it's like the little brother to fantasy football. So a lot of people that start play head-to-head and they love head-to-head. So That's just the way it goes. I like Roto because to me it's the most pure form of baseball. You get your whole season worth of stats. But the head-to-head's fun for like, especially when you're in like a home league because you can trash talk like crazy. So that's always fun.
Yeah.
One thing that we already talked about overreactions as just in general to the first week of the season. One thing that, you know, people that might not have played a lot of fantasy baseball or just might be their type, they like to just go bananas on the waiver wire to start the season. Right. And that could really bury you at times. What is your approach to the waiver wire early? Because some of these guys with hot starts, which we will get into, we know they're not continuing. But some people will go out there, they'll spend half their fab budget on some player, and they'll be releasing them in a week.
I agree. And I used to go bananas with my waiver wire. I would just be like, oh, let's just go crazy. And then I've noticed over the years, you have to find a balance. And that's not just because, you know, I was dumb in making these decisions, but of all, you know, baseball is such a long season. And when you're thinking of waiver wire from a football perspective, it's a little bit easier to approach. But from a baseball perspective, you really have to be careful. And that's a mixture of things. That's the timing. That's the prospects. That's the amount of money that you want to spend. That's the amount of time. And, you know, these guys are so injury prone these days, and it's scary to think of too. So you really have to find a balance. But there's a couple of leagues where I just don't care. I'm like, you know what? Screw it. Let's go crazy. But those are obviously the leagues that I don't have money involved with. But, you know, that's, of course, neither here nor there. But like I mentioned, you have to find a balance. And I'm such a DFS mind these days. I have no patience for a lot of stuff. So a lot of times the waiver wire, I kind of try to stay away from as much as possible because I'm worried that I'm just going to make a stupid decision, because believe it or not, a DFS mind could screw up a season long mind. And that's just, you know, and vice versa. So, you know, everybody in DFS, like, I forget their season long, and season long's like, DFS sounds stupid. But here I am just like trying to play, you know, neutral. And I'm like, they're both great, you guys, you know, so it's really hard to manage both. But so that's kind of where my mentality is right now, is just to find a balance when it comes to approaching your waiver wire. But it depends on who you're playing with too, what kind of scenario they have. If you're with somebody who's going bananas, just push that. Be like, yeah, man, like keep doing it, and then take advantage of him and do it that way, or her, of course.
That's a good point, because I love DFS. I do a weekly podcast or a daily podcast for Monday through Friday. I love DFS, but it does kind of skew your opinion because all you care about is that day. Right. And if that guy spurns you, you don't care. You'll probably go back to the well the next day or the day after on the same guy.
Absolutely. But, and I was just talking about it today about Vincent Velasquez. Like, I hated his matchup today, but then I was like, season long though, oh, I would spend a lot of money. So it just, it's, but it's also kind of fun that way too, because you kind of get both sides of the perspective.
It's like I say, like Steven Strasburg, I will never draft Steven Strasburg because I cannot stand the fact I know he's going to get hurt. Right. But Daily Fantasy, I will play him almost every time he's on the mound because
all in on Steven Strasburg. Absolutely. Take advantage of it. Absolutely.
So the waiver wire, it's a really interesting deal because, you know, you got your like Johnny VR types and stuff from last year that if you were patient, you missed out on, and those guys won championships. So it's tricky to play that fine line. I would just suggest if it's kind of a flash in the pan type guy, like we'll talk about a guy like Jacoby Jones, maybe temper your expectations.
Right.
But like a Manny Margot, go ahead and spend some money.
Absolutely. But
that's just – do your research that. That's kind of how I would suggest it. Just don't go crazy on any name that has like one good start, like Rookie Davis. Let's go to sorry, too soon. One of the most frustrating things for season-long fantasy, and now that I didn't even realize you're that big on the DFS till like this last week when I started seeing your posts, we could do DFS some other time. But season-long is closers. Everybody has to have closers, and one thing they will blow their waiver wire on is the constant changing of the guard. some teams are just crazy, like the A's, the Nationals already screwed us up, but that's already shaky again somewhat. The Rockies got Holland now, but I love I'm blanking on his name now with the A, Ottavino. Love him. And then you got the Padres, where that could be anything any day. So teams like that, like even the Rangers now after last night, another blown save by Dyson. How do you approach those situations?
Well, I mean, I'm an A's like fan at heart. So that they were a huge, you know, scenario like, okay, well, what's the deal? And don't get me wrong, I know they had to strengthen their bullpen, but, you know, you have to, unfortunately, you can't, you know, rush through your starting pitchers no matter how strong your bullpen is. So the situation with the A's was a big question heading into it, and Bob Melvin, of course, can handle it. But he was like, I don't know who my closers are going to be, and I don't know who my relievers are going to be. But then you have this beautiful bullpen names of, like, Casilla, Sean Doolittle, Madsen, Dull, and then Axford if he can stay healthy, and then Hendricks, of course, too. And then if you continue to go further, they're great too. So there were a huge question mark for me, but the beauty of that was Melvin knew no matter what happens, he'd be fine. So I think what Casilla and Doolittle ended up getting the closer roles officially, I think. I'm not 100% sure, but either way, they had a great scenario. But you look at their starting pitchers, and obviously Sonny Gray's battling an injury, and he had so much pressure going on him heading into the season. So that was something. And, you know, if you get through Kendall Graveman or Sean Manea, how many innings are they going to last? You don't want to bring your relievers in this freaking second inning. You can't do that. So that's definitely something that worried me, but they had so much pressure on them to get a stronger bullpen to be a great team. So I'm not surprised they had those big names and spent a lot of money on them. And then as far as the Rockies go, I just saw them last night. Chad Qualls was just here. And he, from the few times that I did see him play, he was actually pitching rather well in his reliever position. You didn't mention Holland and Ottavino, but when it comes to me approaching the reliever, I've noticed like they're kind of like, it depends on your league, of course, but I don't mind going a little bit higher when it comes to maintaining a relief position. And that has a lot to do with the fact that I do understand how my pitchers are, if they can bust through a really strong inning, but then you have to pay attention to the hitters you have. You know, Odubel Herrera really struggles against lefties. He can walk against lefties now, but he's not as patient, or he's working on his patience. But when you're thinking about a pitcher like that, you can't just think about your starter. You have to think about, okay, well, how many lefties are in that relief position too? And a lot of times that's, you know, that's how it goes. So for me, I don't mind kind of, you know, spending a little bit more money depending on what I'm dealing with, especially in the scenarios that we have now where relievers are the new black, as people say, you know, and they're definitely going to save you some runs. Absolutely. If you have a really strong guy. So if somebody were to be like, hey, if I spend a little bit extra on Doolittle or Casilla or somebody like that, what do you say? I'd be like, you know what? Go for it. I don't see the problem in that at all.
Okay. And on the A situation by themselves, I was at first skeptical on why does he keep spending on all these guys. Then it makes sense because Billy Beane's a genius. And, well, it depends on who you talk to. But these guys do well, even Casilla and Doolittle. He's going to flip them at the deadline and get more prospects. So,
right.
Worst case scenario, they do both do well and you get something out of it. So that's where the A's, I think, really, really get it going. Let's get into some players that had some big opening weeks that most of them weren't owned. Some definitely were, and expectations should just be tempered to begin with or go all in. Just kind of let us know. We don't have to go deep dive in all of them. Would you add them? Would you drop them? Kind of where do you see the outlook on some of these guys? We'll kick it off with the most popular name in every show you listen to right now that involves fantasy baseball. He was high on everybody's list coming into the season. Byron Buxton can't hit a beach ball right now. What would you do with Byron Buxton?
Well, I mean, he's had a lot of, you know, situations around him for years. We're just constantly waiting around for him to have his breakout season, are we not? So when it comes to that, I mean, you'd have to look at your scenario, though. I mean, from a DFS perspective, he's very much a high guy for me. I really like him because if you're watching the right performances, maybe. But when it comes to season-long perspective, I mean, he's definitely not like a top five rounder for me just because you don't really know what you're going to get with him as far as his consistencies go. And like I mentioned, we're just waiting around for him, right? However, if he's left over after a certain amount of rounds, I absolutely don't mind you going for him. On a team like the Minnesota Twins, where everybody's kind of, you know, anticipating the worst, minus a few situations this time around. So he's a high guy for me. Obviously, the power is there, or the speed is there. And but it's just whether or not he can actually stay in a game, finish a season kind of scenario for me. So DFS wise, definitely love him. But season long, I'm really hesitant because he's kind of like JD Martinez, where he doesn't really finish a season. So it's difficult for me to kind of get excited about him these days.
With your answer there on him, I have a feeling you have a theory like I do, or a kind of strategy like I do. When it comes to DFS, a lot of people like to target the bombers, which I get. But I like guys like Billy Hamilton. I love Adam Eaton, Inciarte, who even hit a home run today, that can steal bases when they get on. Because if you steal a base, score a run, get a hit, you're almost getting a home run now.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're playing on FanDuel. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's where Buxton comes in because, you know, he's going to have those offers. But those games where he does do his thing, it's huge. Let's talk about one we both mentioned already, and I like him a lot this year. He has 3 home runs already on the season, and he's going to steal a ton of bases. Manuel Margot of the Padres. What are your thoughts on Mr. Manny?
All of the Margot. All of it. All of it, all of it, all of it. I really feel bad that, you know, there was an injury that had to occur for him to 100% get that starting role. But, you know, I mean, between him, Jabari Blash, and Hunter Renfroe, like, what a great group of young guys. Like, it's just somebody that I'm really excited. But season long, absolutely. DFS-wise, people are always choosing between him and Jank. And obviously, they, for some reason, don't like to listen to me and they go Jank. But I'm like, nope, you should have left and stayed with Margot. I love him from every type of format. And he's playing at a park that's not very hitter friendly, and he's still doing wonderful at it. So I love him to Reese's Pieces. Absolutely.
Yeah, with that,
I have an article coming out on him tomorrow too. So watch out for that.
We'll check it out on which one of the 12 websites?
That tomorrow is going to be on Fan Rag Sports, ladies and gentlemen.
Perfect. Yeah, his game plays so well into Petco. I know it's a little more hitter friendly these days, but gap to gap wise, he's going to be running for days out there. It's going to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. Let's hit up one of the Mets pitchers. Had a rough first start, pitched pretty well tonight, actually. Mm-hmm. Zach Wheeler finally looks like he's healthy. So many road bumps along the way. What are your thoughts on Wheeler this season?
I mean, when going into the season, we were more concerned about who was going to get that fourth and fifth kind of rotator spot. Obviously, with Selman having a great spring training, that was something to keep your mind on. But yeah, so I really liked his velocity right now. He's pitching on a team where he has to be great. And then obviously with the Matt Harvey situation, we don't know how long he's going to be out for. I haven't checked on that update, but it's a very interesting rotation. You know, you have DeGroms, you have the like I mentioned, the Harveys, and then of course Noah Syndergaard. And then Matt's who's had more arm surgeries than anybody I could imagine. So that's definitely something to think about. But like I mentioned, his velocity is there. He's not really going to be known for throwing a ton of specialty pitches. But when people do hit off of him, the beauty of him is there's not a lot of hard contact, which I like, especially in that and when they're playing. And of course, he has a strong outfield, so that's not always a scenario. A lot of soft contact this season, which has been great to fall, and actually over his entire career, which I really appreciate. So when it comes to his fastball, he's going to be throwing it a lot of percent of the time. Even his curveball, he's throwing it a little bit more as time goes on, especially this time around. So I really like him from a huge fantasy perspective. And that's pretty much across the board in regards to whatever format you're in.
Now, do pitchers like Wheeler and other young arms, which they've pretty much already told you coming into it, that'll be somewhat on innings limits. Do those, like say season long wise, do those worry you at all? Or do you just say go with it and figure it out later?
Oh, absolutely. I'm always worried about that. But like, I kind of like to mix it up. Like, you know, everybody has their own strategy, whether it's like, do you go towards like, do you get your two running backs or do you hurry up and go all in for your starting pitcher or whatever format you're in? But my thing is I do like a veteran pitcher. I like to have a young pitcher. I like to have a prospect pitcher. And of course, I like to have like a mediocre kind of guy, just to kind of, you know, make it fun, to be honest. So it really depends on your strategies that way. I always worry about pitcher's arms. It doesn't matter who it is. But the younger guys, of course, I'm a little bit more worried because a lot of times when they get promoted, they try to overexert themselves and try a little bit too hard. And the next thing you know, oh, cool, your third Tommy John surgery. So that's where I ultimately come in the back of my mind. But then again, I even it out with a veteran guy who knows better and then a couple of other, you know, similar scenarios that way.
Good philosophy. Moving on to the Yankees backstop. Everyone, in my opinion, drafted him way too high. And this has nothing to do with him being too high, but now he's injured out at least 4 weeks. Gary Sanchez, everyone was like, oh, he's going to hit 1,000 home runs. People don't realize how many he hit in the minors and what reality is. But say when he's healthy again, how do you feel about Gary Sanchez?
I mean, I'm still, you know, relatively high on him. He's got major upside, but we knew that. And you mentioned, you know, from the minors to the bigs, he wasn't in the Pacific Coast League. So his transition was a little bit less bumpy. Pacific Coast League, like you and I would have like a 250 batting average, like let's be honest. So anybody can really hit well there. But when it comes to where he was playing, you know, he was, you know, doing well. And obviously his transition was really smooth. This injury, it is not surprising, not because of like what he's been doing, but injuries just happen. I think he'll be fine. But the thing is when he does come back from injury, I think there's just going to be that same amount of pressure on him. So that's definitely something to think about. But overall, like, I think the guy's a stud and I think he's a future star. And I know you're worried about people drafted him too high, but you know, one of my friends said that he drafted him around the same time he probably drafted Hunter Renfroe because he was such a fan of his. So I'm glad that, you know, some of his picks have come through and he's got so much power. So depending on like what type in a DFS play, he's always wonderful because even if he strikes out, the power is still there and all of that. So it's definitely something to keep your mind off. But like I mentioned, the moment he comes back, I don't want people to put like extra pressure on him. Like, okay, he's going to hit for the cycle or he's going to hit three bombs. Like, let's chill on that.
Yeah, and I'm not trying – I still think he's going to be a heck of a ball player. I was just – like, people swore he's going to be a 40 home run, 330 guy. And it's like, you guys need to temper it down just a little bit here. But and maybe the Judge has gotten off to a hot start. If he keeps hitting, it'll take pressure off of Sanchez to not have to be the face of the young crowd. That could be big too. Moving on to Tampa Bay, Corey Dickerson – always had some, you know, talent, but people thought, oh, it's because he's in Coors, goes to Tampa Bay, has a down year. But now he's getting everyday at-bats, at least with Rasmus out for now. And with when a righty's on the mound, he's leading off, which is just crazy good DFS-wise especially. But season-long, not bad either. DFS-wise, I've been over him every day there's a lefty on the or a righty on the mound. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on him, especially on like a season-long perspective, Corey Dickerson?
I mean, heading into the season, I wasn't like – he was on my radar, but he wasn't on any of my lineups or anything like that. But right now, he's definitely proving himself. And, of course, he's got like, what, 30-something at-bats or plate appearances so far. So it's definitely something to keep in the back of your mind. But he's showing power, which I really, really appreciate, especially for him and his body frame. You're not really expecting that. So his ISO is certainly something to keep an eye on because he's like I mentioned, showing the power and his – you know, I mean, it's really difficult to look at numbers right now just because of like the small sample sizes. But if you're looking at him overall, like he's still, you know, made contact. He was striking out rather around the league average last year. He's striking a little bit more this year, which is definitely something to pay attention to, but that's going to happen when you're making all these plate appearances. Those are just going to rise. So he's definitely something that I like. And if, you know, kind of looking at him now, I wish I could have done something with him, but from a season-long perspective, absolutely. DFS-wise, he's rarely talked about, to be honest.
Yeah, I love him DFS-wise. And there's a righty on the mound, he's leading off. He's so cheap. But another guy that got traded from Boston to Milwaukee, most thought he'd platoon because of his righty-lefty splits. But he's getting the everyday at-bats, usually cleanup every night. Travis Shaw of the Brewers, I think the fact he's getting everyday at-bats, he's already swinging it good to start the year, similar to Dickerson, small sample size. But do you think there's a good outlook for Shaw throughout the season.
Oh, I love him. I do this segment called Three Swipes and You're Out for FanVice, and it's basically talking people into not, you know, taking these guys on for DFS-wise. And I was like, I wonder what Shaw's been up to. So I looked at his numbers, and the guy's just phenomenal. Like, so I'm really glad that he's open, you know, getting more plate appearances in at-bats and everything like that, like you mentioned. So that's always great. And coming from the Red Sox, like, that's kind of difficult to do. But he's proving himself, and I'm really loving everything that he's doing. And there was a stat that I found yesterday. I think his fly ball rate wasn't raised. He's hitting a lot of ground balls. That's what it was. He's hitting a lot of ground balls, which kind of makes me worried. That does depend on the type of pitcher he's going up against. But believe it or not, you know, I was just told recently ground ball pitchers sometimes perform better against or ground ball hitters perform better against ground ball pitchers. So, I mean, and vice versa. And it was this weird thing that we talked about. So it depends on how you're looking at it. But if he's in the right scenario, I absolutely love him. And so instead of adding him in my three swipes, I was like, there's no way in hell I can talk anybody out of putting him in their lineup. So I refrain from doing it.
Gotcha. Moving on to Detroit, Jacoby Jones is one of their higher prospects, not like high, but pretty high. Lots of pop. Was rated like a third baseman. They haven't played in the outfield right now. I have a feeling when JD Martinez comes back, things might change a little bit. But he's shown some nice pop, gets on base. He's hitting towards the bottom of the order. This is one of the guys I think people should kind of slow down on the waiver wire. But what's your thoughts on Jacoby Jones?
I agree. I don't think he's anybody that you should go crazy over. However, his athleticism is something that is just phenomenal. He's great in the outfield. And I love when it's somebody like Trey Turner, like he was trying to get to the bigs. So they were like, hey, play the outfield. You might be able to get there faster. And then he does. And he gets to kind of go back to the infield. That was kind of great too. So with Jacoby Jones, he did it. He was like, all right, well, whatever I need to play, like I'll play. And I love hearing that from a guy. So he's super athletic. I'm not going to take that away from him. But a waiver wire situation, I might be hesitant.
And that's a good thing to mention, because the fact they wanted to find a place for him and he took advantage of it. Maybe he doesn't disappear when JD comes back and, you know, something else happens and he gets more playing time. They do have a kind of interesting outfield situation to begin with. So that could be something to keep an eye on with him, but I wouldn't go running to the waiver wire. This is one, I know you have an inside track with your fan rag boys, especially Tommy Stokey, who I've had on Bench with Bubba. Archie Bradley. I watched him face San Francisco last weekend, and you've seen him in Reno. And he was always like a mid to low 90s guy. Now in the bullpen, he's bringing the heat, and he looks really good. And with Robin Hood closing right now, there's always a chance for a new closer. What is your outlook on Archie Bradley?
I've always loved him, but pitching not only in the PCL, but at Greater Nevada Field, it's really difficult. And people were actually telling me that pitching at the field in Reno was the equivalent to the minor league version of Coors. The way that altitude. Look at you. I don't know big words. If it has more than one vowel, I can't. You know, there's more than one syllable. I can't do
it. You save all the vowels for your name.
Yeah, exactly. So they're comparing that to Coors. Obviously, the dimensions aren't there, but definitely the altitude issue. And every pitcher I've ever talked to says they struggled pitching there. So I was always worried about him with his transitions. And he was very much a guy where he was like Peter O'Brien, like constantly back and forth between Reno, which I really hated. But you mentioned his velocity, and that has definitely skyrocketed. Added a few miles an hour onto his fastball. So he was around like the 92 range last season, and this time around he's almost peaking at 96, which is amazing to see. And then his slider, of course, that's adding more to it. And then everything else has just been great. So I just like him on this team. And you know, between him and Braden Shipley, obviously I think it was an easy play to call to have Archie back up there. I remember it was just like, when is this guy ever just gonna stay up there? So he's great. He has enough major league experience where I don't even think about him as a triple A guy at all, unless like an injury happens. He's great with the team. He's just all around a great guy. I'm just constantly waiting for him to have a breakout season. And I think if not this season, he's definitely well on his way.
That's good. I think if they keep him in the bullpen, which I think they should, he's a future closer for them or somebody else. I really like what I'm seeing from him so far. And people that don't know what the PCL is and what we're talking about, you have like Reno, Colorado Springs, Albuquerque, and some others where the ball literally, it's like hitting a racquetball.
Right.
So it, It's ridiculous. Here's an arm I haven't been as high on, and he's got good stuff. Probably a good guy. I don't even know him. But Gerrit Cole for the Pittsburgh Pirates had a down 2016. In his first couple starts, he's leaving that fastball very hittable again.
Yeah.
Is there any cause for concern with Cole? Like, just, you know, maybe it's time to throw in the towel for owning him, not for him to stop pitching, but for owning him.
He's done. Or, it's time for you to retire,
Gerrit. He's in UCLA, I think, with Crawford and stuff. He's plenty young. I'm just saying, you know, for the ace potential people are looking for, I think it's time to step back. But what's your thoughts on Cole?
No, I agree. He hasn't really been proving himself. And that's ultimately how what you feel like as a fantasy owner. If you think enough games have gone by, you know, obviously go for it kind of deal. He's pitched in, I just had it up, 11 innings so far. So that's a very low amount. But he has over a 6.55 ERA. So they're tattooing the ball off of him. And his strikeout rate is extremely, extremely low. But he's not even walking, guys. He's just getting hit. And it's just kind of like embarrassing at this point. So it's just something that I definitely like to keep an eye on. He's not striking out a lot of guys. And it's just, I don't know what else you want for in a pitcher like that, especially with the name of Gerrit Cole. If you're looking at the contact, his medium and hard contact percentages are high, and so when they are hitting off them, the balls are flying. So that's definitely something you need to pay attention to, but go with how you feel. If you think that's enough innings for you to be like, okay, bye, I need to drop you, that's fine. But also, it is only 11 innings, but that's just kind of your own play to call.
Yeah, no, it's very short. I I'm almost looking even back to last year where it looked just like a replay already, so it's kind of little worrisome there. But yeah, it is early for all these guys, so yeah, keep that in mind. Another guy it's early for is 14 solid innings to start the year. I was just talking about with someone else, Clayton Richard, out of nowhere, it seems like to me, dominated the Dodgers, good second start, not a big strikeout guy, but if you're looking for, you know, I guess whip and ERA, quality starts league, maybe, is Clayton Richard even worth a waiver wire ad right now, or is this just like Jared Weaver throwing good and Coors type stuff?
I think it's a Jared Weaver throwing good and Coors type of stuff. And the reason why is because I've been talking to a lot of these players, and especially like the younger guys, and he's, you know, not really young, but the thing that I've noticed is what you really want to pay attention to is the base situation too. Like, is he leaving a lot of people on base? Like, are guys stealing off of him? And if you're looking at him, his left on base percentage is solid, but I've noticed when it comes to him, I think people are going to be stealing off him a lot too. A lot with the base scenario, you have to keep it, your mind with that as well. Not to mention the fact that the guy is known for constantly being promoted, demoted, everything like that too. So do you really want a guy that doesn't have like longevity as well? So that's something to keep in the back of your mind. Definitely having a really rough start to the season. So that's, you know, nothing that I'm too high on. They're not really hitting the ball that hard off of him, but that hard contact percentage is certainly up there. And they're certainly pulling the ball off of him, and you're looking at a lot of these percentages, and it's pretty scary considering the fact, you know, his home run fly ball ratio is just through the roof. Not really through the roof, but it's not high. They are hitting a lot of grounders more than they are fly balls, which is, I guess, kind of cool, but if you're thinking about it, where is he pitching? You know, so that's definitely something to think about too. So he's not a guy that I'm really excited about, especially not a guy you want to be making like any sort of trades for. He's definitely a guy that you're going to see in your free agent list quite a bit, so that's unfortunately the reality of it.
No, and I like that the left on base stat. That's something a lot of people don't look at, and they should, because I look at it a lot when people critique bullpens, because a lot of those guys
it's a great tiebreaker.
It's very good. I like that one a lot. Okay, we're gonna go to the two Reds youngsters. I know how you feel on one, but the rest of the world might not yet. Rookie Davis, one of the best baseball names ever, at least for his first year. And then Amir Garrett, who actually pitched pretty decent again tonight, he looks like he might be something. Mm-hmm. You can give me the brief run through on those two. What's your thoughts on the Reds youngsters that were surprises to even get jobs to start the year?
Yeah, and I feel like with this scenario, like it was, I don't know, there was just so much going into the season. The Reds are always kind of like a team. They're not going to be winning the World Series, but last year there was like those few games where they were just scrappy and making it difficult for the rest of the people in their division. So you did mention Rookie Davis, and before he even went in, people were asking me about him. And believe it or not, I had not done a lot of work on him or with him or anything like that. So I just kind of looked up his numbers and I was just shocked he even got a starting role. And if you look at the DFS prices, I'm so glad I can openly talk about DFS on this thing. It's so wonderful. You're wondering why he was like $5,000+ across the industry as a starting pitcher. You're kind of like, what is going on here? And then you look at his numbers, you're like, ah, yes, of course, that's why. So he's obviously good. So we really don't have to pay attention to him that much in my scenarios, but that's the thing. Like, he got his shot and he kind of blew it. And who was the older guy who got two bombs off of him? Who was it? Why can't I think of it?
What team were they facing again? The Cardinals?
Was it the Cardinals? It was a red team.
Yeah, it had to be the older Cardinals.
Guy.
Was it? Brandon Moss?
It wasn't Moss. No, it was an older guy. Cause I remember making the joke like, okay, he had a great game and that's pretty much all we're going to see from him.
Okay, I'm not
supposed to look at what you're talking. Somebody, some guy hit two bombs off of him in his debut, and it really was like, but it was off of Rookie Davis. So what's that saying? So I mean, he went out there and he tried. He definitely needs, you know, more outings, if you will. But when it comes to Amir Garrett, like, he blew my socks off. I was like, okay, kid, all right, I see you. And against the Cardinals, nonetheless, that's not an easy lineup to go up against. It's not spring training where we're laughing at the lineups that they have to face, where it's like inner squad, double A people with their cousins playing on the team. Like, this is real baseball now. So he very much impressed me. I recently wrote about him over on Fangraphs, and you know, his K9 ratio isn't as up as you'd like to be, but the guy's only had, you know, pitched in 6.2 innings so far. So it's definitely something to pay attention to. So I definitely like him. And I think he just needs a little bit more outings for us to really get a bigger, you know, sign of him. But he's got a really solid walk percentage. Is not walking a lot of guys, is striking out enough, and as far as hitting off of him, it hasn't been, there's no hard contact really. So when they are hitting off of him, they're making solid contact, but it's nothing too crazy. They're not pulling the ball off of him. They're kind of, you know, making the ball kind of go up center. So he's doing everything he needs to do. So he's definitely impressing me so far.
Yeah, I really like what I've seen, especially people didn't realize he's a former Rutgers basketball player. He wasn't even really playing baseball.
Oh, nice.
Really impressive stuff there. Rookie Davis, this name's going to make you happy. Daniel Nava.
Yes, that's what Daniel, it is.
I had to start laughing when I saw that. Daniel Nava. And he only went 3 innings and 4 innings in his start, so he doesn't even go deep. So, yeah, keep that in mind. Right. One last youngster, if you want to talk about the other guy that's been pitching great for the Rockies, Kyle Freeland. He got beat up a little bit today, but it's Coors Field, and it's his first start in Coors. That was kind of expected. But he looks great in his first start on the road in Milwaukee, which isn't the best place to pitch either. Is there anything to him? And then Sensatella, if you want to just briefly touch on him, go for it. He pitched actually pretty well in Coors yesterday. Two good starts from him. What are your thoughts on the two youngsters in Colorado?
I know more about Freeland, and when it comes to Rockies, I never really go by their ERA so much, because you have to take that with the grain of salt. Like, look at Gray's numbers. Like, are you really going to stay away from Gray just because he has that 4-whatever ERA? No, if you have a Rockies jersey on, you're going to have a little bit of a higher ERA. So I never take that away from him, especially because of just of who he is. And we were talking about left on base percentages, and his raised a little bit, but that's what happens when you're promoted. So I'm definitely glad he got the starting job. But it's the rest of the bad. He's striking out a lot of guys, which is always what we want to see. And his strikeout 9 ratio is exactly 9. So he's striking out one guy per inning. I mean, so far it's a very small sample size, but that's ultimately the road that you want to be on. Not a lot of hard contact for him either. And that's what I kind of like. And his Sierra is very stellar as well. So I know people are obsessed with that ERA, but if you look at the Sierra numbers, those are kind of what's a little bit more reflective of his characteristics. I don't know too much about the other guy though.
No, not a problem. I didn't even know who he was. And yeah. I said, okay, if you want to really roll the dice in a GPP, go for him against Milwaukee. And it worked out. It worked out great because it's Milwaukee. They strike out at them. Give it a shot. I did not touch him much yesterday in Coors, and he still pitched good. So I don't know. I'll keep an eye on him for sure. Let's get into a couple last questions here. I have a couple off the wall ones from what we have on the outline. But since you're big in the DFS, just real quick, do you prefer DraftKings or FanDuel?
I worked for FanDuel for a year and a half. So I just know their prices a little bit more. But they, I guess I like DraftKings a little bit more for baseball, but like I said, I'm just more familiar with the FanDuel site and the prices and everything like that. So I could look at a FanDuel price and know it's expensive and cheap because I'm so used to what it was. So I obviously go more towards FanDuel because that's like my home. That's like what I got. That's how I got my big gig and everything like that. But I like DraftKings on the MLB side for sure.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I love their baseball so much more. But
they have
else,
a better relationship with MLB than FanDuel ever did.
Another recent article you wrote, I actually made a point to email it to myself to make sure I read it because there's so much stuff on the timeline every day. I just forget. not yours. I'm just talking about Twitter in general.
Well, no, I tweet a lot too. So it's
if it's pertinent, I don't care. No, it's kidding. But you wrote a nice piece on the 2020 Olympics with baseball and softball. Yeah. The WBC was just amazing this year. I've never been a huge fan just because you don't get all the right players there. The pitching's kind of a mess, and there's no real good time to do it. But if the Olympics is going to allow pros, which would be in the middle of summer when everyone's ramped up, this could be something. What's kind of your insight for those that haven't seen your article or anything like that? I just want to real briefly touch on that.
Well, the interesting, you mentioned the WBC, and I was the same mentality. It wasn't until I interviewed somebody from the Australia team where it really opened my eyes. You know, some of these kids are only going to play in the minors. They're never going to get promoted. They're never going to reach the World Series. So their version of the World Series is representing their country. And you can only do that during the WBC and now the Olympics. How other else can you do it? There was almost a million fans coming out to watch the WBC. And I can't tell you the amount of times I beg and plead my friends to come just to a simple Aces game, you know? So it's just stuff like that. So to see that really pumped me up. And I think the worry is, of course, you know, are these guys going to get injured? Salvador Perez got really lucky and didn't get as injured as he could have been playing the WBC. But beyond that, like, what better way? I mean, it's America's freaking pastime. And you're going to, and I can't even believe they removed it, you know, at all. But I think it's definitely going to bring more awareness to the sport, which is what we definitely need because sports is just, it's getting so much backlash and, you know, people are obviously have a lot of controversy towards what Rob Manfred's doing. So I think it's great for the country. And of course, bringing softball in, which watching USA softball was like one of the coolest things ever, you know, and that's what put Jessica Mendoza on the map. So it's definitely something like that. So if you're, you know, a person who doesn't like baseball, but you love your country, like freaking watch a baseball game, like just get over it and watch one USA game and you'll make me happy. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, it was amazing. First off, the women's softball is so much fun to watch, and and you don't get it any other time. At least baseball, we get other times. You don't get softball. And the fact that both of those were taken out of the Olympics is just criminal for the stuff that they have in the Olympics. It's just a joke in itself.
Right.
But, the WBC, people need to watch it if they didn't for some reason. I had people texting me that never watched baseball, so it was good to see.
Yeah.
Really good to see, and I hope it keeps growing like this. Another question, if you don't listen to the Moonshots pod, you guys should, two good people on that, two young, you know, good people. One of them that I'm talking to right now is a big wine person, and I appreciate wine living in California. So I had to ask you, what is your preference?
I was raised alcoholic. Like I was drinking when I was 12. When I first turned 21 and discovered wine, I really didn't like wine until I honestly turned 21. But
wink, wink, discovered it when she was 21. Wink, wink.
I was drinking whiskey at the age of 19. Like, I will not lie about that. I was raised in Reno. You had to be drunk all the time.
That is true. That is so true.
To deal with the fact that you live in Reno.
I visit there way too often. I'm with you. Okay, yeah, continue.
Exactly. So I was really into whites because like they're like the sweeter ones. But lately, probably the last few years, I've really gotten into reds. Really obsessed with blends. But lately, I've been liking like the Merlots and the Cabernet Sauvignons, and all of that. So, but honestly, I haven't had a glass of wine in maybe 3 weeks. I've been on this beer binge lately, so it's been kind of nice. Yeah. And like, I've noticed, like, I actually took a wine tasting class, and if you drink wine and it's not in the right glass, it's a waste of time. It is a waste of time. Because like, if you fly a plane and they give you wine in a plastic cup and you're getting upset because you're not having great wine, it's like the wine may not be bad. You're just drinking out of it a plastic cup. So that's, you know, that's neither here nor there, but there's nothing better than, you know, drinking a glass of wine and watching baseball, but you can't get a glass unless you're like watching it from the bar above the stadium. That's a rare occasion. So I just choose beer or like a margarita or something, because those don't taste in a cup. So it's fine.
Yeah, they just go down nicely. Yes. Especially when it gets warm in Reno, it'll be fine. Yeah. You and Alex, you need to have an episode where you teach him wine. That'd be priceless.
Oh, I should. That's a great idea.
Because he would just be mind blown.
Yes.
Like just even the glasses comment, he'd be mind blown.
Oh yeah. Because it's a big deal. And like at first I was like, this is stupid. I'm just here to get bombed. But the next thing you know, you're like, wait, they make a good point. And they actually set you home with the glasses, which was great. So it really makes a difference. Yeah.
Okay. A couple more here. We'll bring it back to baseball. Five favorite, or just, you know, not even your five, top three or whatever, favorite baseball movies.
Okay, so believe it or not, Sandlot doesn't make my top five. Ooh. I know that sounds awful, but
because there's a lot of good ones. What do you got? Oh no, did we lose her at the movie time?
Why am I not thinking?
We lost.
Oh.
No, we lost you. Can you start over again?
Yeah, of course. My number one is For Love of the Game, because I just am obsessed with that whole entire movie, because there's a little bit of love, a little bit of baseball, and like they end up together in the airport. It's like so drama and like so girly. And believe it or not, I am a chick. I know that surprises a lot of people. And then, of course, number two is A League of Their Own, because being able to watch Madonna dive for a ball is like the coolest thing ever. And then number three would probably have to be Angels in the Outfield.
Nice. So yeah, your list, and I'm not knocking it all, because like I said, there's a bunch of great baseball movies, way different than, you know, the majority of the group. I like that. A little different. I like it. Now that you basically live in a ballpark during the summertime, what are your favorite ballpark's foods? Because minor league's one thing, they have some good stuff, but like you see Arizona is one of the best and some other ones that have crazy stuff.
Oh, it's getting ridiculous. We're actually talking about that on our Moonshots podcast next week, because it's just like steroids.
It's crazy.
We know where the steroids are going. It's in the food. That's where it's going. It is going.
Yes, when you see the players eating the food in the dugout, make them pee in a cup.
Right, exactly. So this is going to make me sound like a complete snob, but I don't care. The last maybe 30 games I've gone to, I've been working, so they feed us. So I don't really have to like go and eat ballpark food. But there's something that they're serving at the Aces ballpark that I'm like, I'll pay for this. I do not care. And it's basically like French fry nachos with like pulled pork on them.
That's outstanding.
Oh my gosh. So it's definitely like that. The simple hot dog is always good. I'm a just ketchup on a hot dog kind of girl though, so I'm weird. Yeah, that's probably going to end like a marriage for me one day. I just know it. just the first one, maybe not the second or third, but for sure the first one. And then I really like pretzels and cheese. Like, and I think that's so weird, but just, oh, it's just so good. And if they warm it up the right way, and the fact that you spent $13 on a pretzel with cheese, like you better enjoy it. And then of course, like you can never go wrong with like a brownie sundae. Oh, it's like the best, especially if they put it in a helmet. Hell yeah.
You got the good ones. I'm telling you, you got them simple. The pretzel made me laugh, because at the game last night, the waiter guy comes through the seats, and we order a round of beers, and then we're all, we need two pretzels with nacho cheese, please.
Yeah, like I know it's made out of like chemicals and bad stuff, but sometimes you need to dip a pretzel in cheese. It's just the best. Yeah.
Last question. Favorite ballparks you visited?
So, okay. This is kind of weird. Like, believe it or not, like as much crap, and that's no pun intended, that the Coliseum gets, every time I go there, I have a great time. I really, really do. And that's like where I saw my first home run. It was the last game I saw with my late father. My friends are always there, and like, you know, it's just always a great time and all of that. So that's probably like one of my favorites. Petco was amazing. I loved going to Petco. It's just beautiful. And everybody's chill because they're all high. So like, it's really cool. And then, where else did I go? Coors Field was awesome. I saw Tulowitzki hit two bombs. And it was funny, like, I moved. I was, like, standing in a spot, and Tulo hit a bomb, but we missed it. And we're like, let's move. Let's steal somebody else's seats. Right, we moved. Tulo hit a bomb, like, right where we were sitting. So I totally missed on getting a home run ball. And then I would say I haven't been to that many, believe it or not. So that's good. Actually, Kauffman was gorgeous. But it was super humid. I just remember it being like super, super humid. And I think those are all, that's all that I, oh, and then I went to AT&T and that was cool, but it was just followed, like covered in tourists, which I didn't like.
It has its moments. I had to explain it to someone the other day. They're like, oh, you have great fans out there. I said, yeah, we do. But it's also annoying at times because they're coming straight from work in their suits or this or other. I'm like, right. It's a baseball game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always dress like I'm going to prom when I go to a game, but that's just because I'm annoying like that.
But I do like the point you made about Oco Coliseum, because it is an absolute dump.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about that. But I always have a good time there.
Absolutely.
It's great. People talk so much trash on it, and most of it's deserved.
Right.
But it really is a great place to go to. Like, something about not being all ritzy, I think, is unique and fun about it. Because mm-hmm. all these new stadiums are just like, oh, don't touch this because it's brand new. Or don't do this because it's a whole different – like, Yankee Stadium, for crying out loud, is just – it almost looks disgusting now compared to the old Yankee Stadium. But another story for another day.
Right.
Well, Jessica, we've been on for quite a while now. And I had an absolute blast. That was fun. A lot of fun.
Me too.
I'd like to thank you for joining us. We will do this again sometime if you'll have me.
I will. We'll have to have a DFS dedicated show. That'd be fun.
I'm in. We will make something happen one of these days. We can do that for sure. If I ever make it to Reno again during the Aces season, I will hit you up and check out the ballpark. Yeah, but everybody, check her out. She has work everywhere. Check her workout. Don't check her out. Check the workout.
You can check me out. I would like that little ego boost, but you know, it's fine.
She's, like she said, she has an article coming out in FanRag Sports tomorrow. She writes, I see a lot of her sportsnot.com articles, and she's all over the place. FanGraphs, FanVice, everywhere. Check out her podcast, Moonshots Pod. I know I said it a lot. I'm not kidding. It's not super long. It's always just funny off the wall stuff. Her and Alex are great. And check her out on Twitter at KleinschmidtJD, and you'll get all the stuff you need from her right there. So, Jessica, again, thanks for joining us. That was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Everybody, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 35, and we will catch you guys next time.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.